Hey, all you terrible people. Be sure to stay tuned to hear a promo from one of our friends.
All serial killers live next door to someone, and Dennis Rader was no different. Better known under the pseudonym BTK, bind, torture, kill. Rader was an expert at the double life, devoted dad by day, savage killer at night. He managed to get away with murder for 3 entire decades. He built his children a treehouse that he later stashed Polaroids of his victims in. He calmed his daughter's fears when she told him she was afraid of the serial killer on the loose. "The only thing I can figure out," the killer later said, "is that I have compartmentalized somewhere in my body. I can live a normal life and quickly switch from one gear to the next. I guess that's why I got away with it." Would you be fooled by Rader's act? Find out on the next episode of The Jury Room.
Welcome to Terrible People Doing Terrible Things. I'm Laura, a true crime and horror fan who enjoys researching dark and twisted stories.
And I'm Amanda, and I'm a licensed psychologist who enjoys studying the worst of humanity. So today, Laura, I'm going to talk to you about something that I think pretty much captures one of my worst fears.
Oh, fun.
As a homeowner.
Okay. I love horror fan. Let's
yeah. go. That's going to kind of be my lead in to this. Okay. What would you say is one of your worst fears in terms of like being a homeowner, things that can go wrong?
Like at home?
Yeah. I don't know if that's the best way to ask the question, but like something really bad happens to you or something really creepy.
My honest biggest fear is like bystander syndrome.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's like just me screaming for help and nobody helping.
No one answering.
Yeah. And people like looking, making eye contact with people and being like, help me.
People though, they'll be taking videos. They'll be on TikTok about it.
I know. I will haunt every person who is present for my death and was holding a camera. I'm haunting. But as a homeowner, I guess break-ins are the scariest thing.
Yeah.
I guess my biggest fear is, okay, so when I'm laying asleep at night, the cats are kind of loud because they're nocturnal.
Yes.
They run around, they make big noises. And I always like, I hear the noise and I'm like, I have to tell myself like, it's the cat. But then my brain is like, it's too big to be the cat.
Oh,
I hear somebody walking up the stairs.
Yeah.
Like I'm terrified of somebody being in my house while I'm asleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like breaking in overnight or something.
Just breaking in and like creeping around. Just being in my home.
Yeah.
And I'm unaware of it. And
okay.
I'm also there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's somewhat similar, you know, to mine where I think my biggest fear, it's like now that we have an attic. If we had an attic or a cellar, these would be my fears for sure. And we have an attic now, so it works. Is having someone living up there and not knowing about it.
Now that is, that's a terrifying thing. Because I firmly believed that someone lived in my attic when I was a kid.
Okay.
Because I would hear like almost footsteps. I'm sure it was a like fat squirrel or something.
Sure.
But like I firmly believed that somebody lived up there. And I have hated attics like ever since. I hate because of the dark spaces and I just like.
Yeah.
And I feel like somebody living in your attic's almost worse than your basement.
They're up overhead.
Something about them being above you.
It seems like they'd have better access to kind of to spy on you almost as a result of that. Like cutting a hole in the floor versus a hole in the ceiling to look down.
And I've seen that. People do that. There have been people who like, you know, live next to fucking college kids, college girls or something, and like go up there and cut a little hole in the ceiling.
Yeah.
Put a little camera.
Oh yeah. I remember hearing about it, you know, tanning beds.
Oh.
Like owners of tanning salons and things like that would have little
y'all nasty
holes and cameras.
Fucking stop it.
Well, and women's bathroom stalls and stuff too.
Always.
So there was a guy, speaking of that, it didn't happen while I was there, But at a university I attended, a couple of years after I was gone, there were reports of this man walking. Somehow he was up in the girls' dorm, and he was walking and just putting his phone up under the shower stalls and taking like photos and stuff. They caught him.
Lovely. Something similar happened at my school while I was going there at Georgia State. Mm-hmm. Somebody had set up a camera in the bathroom, and they put up signs or something that said like, be careful or whatever. And I was like, how am I supposed to know if there's a camera in here?
I can't tell. I'm always like aware of that now in dressing rooms and things mm-hmm. like that. I'm like, is that a hole for a camera? What is that?
But they make them so small now. But like, you can have like spy cameras that are like in a button.
Oh,
now,
well, pins.
You know what I mean? Everything's so small. You're never going to be able to see it.
No.
I've just adopted the mentality of like, you want to see my naked? Here you go. It ain't much to look at.
Like, you're going to see me and it's not going to be entertaining.
Are you happy? Like, I just like just.
Except it probably will be because it's the whole voyeurism aspect. So
I think every time I go into a dressing room or a bathroom stall from now on, I'm just going to like go and shake my titties and be like, do you like it?
There you go.
Then that way it's just covering my bases. If I am on camera, at least I'm doing something really weird.
I'm going to have to think about what I want to do to like be weird about it. But give me some time. I'll come up with something. So in the vein of having someone hiding in your home and not knowing about it, that's pretty much what this story is going to be about today.
Great.
So I'm going to be talking about a man that came to be known as the Denver Spider-Man. And this isn't your web-slinging hero, Spider-Man.
That's the first thing you think of is like, oh, okay, so he's doing good stuff? No.
Cute little Peter Parker got bit by a radio. No. No, this is not someone that got bit by a radioactive spider.
Got bit by a radioactive perv.
Yeah. But this is, again, right up there with some of my worst fears of having somebody living in your tiny, rarely used attic and not paying the rent.
That's the biggest problem is like, fine, you're going to live up there. That's cool. But like, could you chip in a little?
Yeah. Like I'll set out a jar, you know, like people have a swear word jar. I'll set out a jar. Like anytime you've peeked on me doing something, you got to put a dollar in.
Mm-hmm. This ain't no free show.
Yeah, this is the honor jar. You got to pay for the show and pay for the food you're taking. So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
So Theodore Edward Conies was a drifter who had fallen on hard times in 1941.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not unusual for his circumstances in life. However, as he was unable to finish high school due to his poor health, they didn't really ever explain what they meant by poor health, but he was told he wouldn't live to see his 18th birthday.
So he's sickly. He has some kind of...
So he was in pretty bad shape. He's very sickly.
So he's got a bad shake in life so far.
He did. He got a bad hand in life in a lot of ways. And he, unsurprisingly, struggled with maintaining gainful employment and thus meeting his basic needs like housing in his adult years.
Right.
Prior to being out on his own, Theodore had lived with his mother, Isabella, in Denver, Colorado. So he and his mother had relocated to Denver from Petersburg, Illinois, after Theodore's father, Thomas Conies, passed away in 1888. And Theodore would have just been about 6 years old at this time. So pretty young when his father died. And I think his father, like most people's fathers were back in that time, was the breadwinner.
Right.
So family relocates him and his mom to Denver. And while living in Denver, his mom works as a housekeeper at the local Denver Democratic Club up until her death in 1911.
Okay.
So it appears that he lived with her up until she passed died. Away.
So his parents were taking care of him. He was sickly.
Yes.
And his parents were paying. They were working.
Yes. They were making sure he had, you know, a home,
right.
food, things like that. And he would have been about 28 or 29
when
she passed away. So that's, especially for that time, that's older to be still
Yeah, that's older. And
mother
like,
and dependent on her.
Yeah. And for the time, like being sickly, you couldn't do like a lot of the jobs that he would have been able to do at his education level and stuff would have been physical labor.
Yeah. Lots of manual labor.
So, and he's not going to be able to do that.
No, or at least not for long. You know, maybe he could hold it down for a little while, but not for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So again, this is just kind of painting the picture of this poor man's life. And the next 30 years of his life were marred by financial difficulties and homelessness, despite him having employment at different times as a bookkeeper and as a salesman.
Oh, okay.
By 1941, Theodore was likely looking for work and food as well as shelter, and he decided to approach a gentleman that he was acquainted with from his youth. You see, Theodore had spent quite a bit of time at the Denver Guitar Club when he was younger, as he was relatively successful and talented in terms of being a mandolin player. So I read something where people would come to him even though he was like a teenager, like 16, 17, to get lessons.
Oh, wow. So kind of a bit of a prodigy?
Yeah, like they called him a, you know, maestro and things like that. Yeah. So he had a reputation.
He had a natural talent for music.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it appears that Philip Peters, a neighbor of sorts to Theodore and his mother back in the day, and Philip's wife Helen were also musically inclined because they had spent time at the guitar club. And this seems to be where the Peters first met this young, frail-looking Theodore.
Okay.
There are reports that the couple took pity on Theodore in a lot of ways. They noticed, you know, he was pretty thin, pretty frail. I think they worried about his mother's ability to provide for him and herself based on her employment. And so they would have him over to dinner pretty regularly.
Okay. So they're kind of like a nice couple.
Yeah. Nice neighbors trying to take him in and treat him to a meal every now and then.
Okay.
So regardless of the Peters' reasons, one might speculate that they would come to regret inviting Theodore into their home with welcome arms, as the events of October 17th, 1941 would forever change Theodore's life and the lives of Philip and Helen Peters.
Okay.
So by 1941, Philip Peters was 73 years old, and he had retired from working with the railroad. Theodore Conies was now 58 years old and would be turning 59 in November. Prior to the events of that fateful evening in October, there are reports that Theodore was in the Peters neighborhood back in September and had considered approaching Mr. Peters to ask for a kind of handout because he was homeless, needed food and money in addition to shelter.
Okay, so he lived with them when he was younger.
Well, he didn't live with them, but they would have him over.
He lived next to them.
So they lived in the same neighborhood.
Okay. So, but he hasn't seen these people since... Well, maybe not seen them, but he hasn't...
been as involved in their lives, I guess.
Okay.
I'm not really sure about that, but I think he was in the Denver area this whole time, but maybe drifting from place to place.
So he's just kind of drifting back into these people's lives.
Yes.
Okay.
So he was, you know, going to ask for some kind of help. I don't know if that was going to be food or money, but for whatever reason, Theodore decides not to approach him. He holds off on that.
Okay.
And I think part of the reason for this may be based on the fact that it was said he really resented that people took pity on him and judged him for his health conditions and his frailty.
I mean, he's had a rough life. I could understand some animosity towards other humans. Like,
well, and especially if they seem successful and happy. And I think the Peters did.
Yeah. So he just sounds kind of like bitter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Bitter, hasn't had an easy hand in life by any means, seems to just have a lot of bad luck in terms of his health and employment too. So,
yeah.
So deciding against that kind of indirect approach of asking for help, Theodore decides to take a more direct approach to securing food and shelter, and he breaks into the Peters' home one evening in September 1941.
Okay.
So after he's caught, he describes how he had planned to just take food and money initially. But the cold weather was approaching, you know, so we're in Denver, Colorado. This is fall. Winter's right around the corner.
Yeah. And he's homeless. I mean, he's going to freeze to death.
Yeah. Well, and he also said he just didn't think his lungs could take it.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, you put in this sickly. Yeah. He was probably going to die that winter.
Yeah. Yeah. And just didn't want to be in that level of discomfort, which I can understand.
Yeah, totally.
So while Theodore was scouring the residence for food, he happened to notice a small hole or trapdoor. I saw it described as both a hole and a trapdoor in one of the home's closets.
Okay.
And he's a pretty small frame, pretty small guy. He's able to crawl through that hole, which then connects up to the home's small attic.
Okay.
So Theodore kind of bunks in here for the next few weeks. And this is unbeknownst to either Mr. or Mrs. Peters. So he's up there.
Oh, that gives me the heebie-jeebies. Somebody being like in your wall. Yeah. Like,
yeah, no, thank you. Mr. Peters had actually been living alone in the family home for about 5 weeks leading up to October 17th.
Okay.
Because his wife, Helen, had broken her hip and was recovering in the hospital. So he's home alone for a majority of this time leading into the tragic events that take place on the 17th of October.
Okay.
And finally, I'm going to talk about what happens on that day. It appears that Philip Peters happened to catch Theodore rummaging through the refrigerator the night of October 17th.
Oh, God.
So a struggle ensues in which Mr. Peters strikes Theodore with his cane, and then Theodore responds by hitting Mr. Peters with the back of a pistol he had found in the home earlier.
Oh, boy.
Yes. And at some point in the struggle, the pistol breaks, and this is when Theodore grabs a cast iron stove shaker. And I'll explain what that is.
Yeah, I was like, I know cast iron, but I don't know what a stove shaker is.
So he supposedly is grabbing an actual iron stove.
Oh.
This frail man.
An iron
stove? Is grabbing
stove?
An iron stove.
A cast iron is so heavy.
I know.
Like, I could barely lift a cast iron pan.
So I think there are some that were a little smaller.
Bro, I don't care.
But a cast iron skillet is really heavy. We have a 10-inch and a 12-inch. Yeah. And like half the time I'm like, I can't do it.
I cannot lift it with one hand. Yeah. Like my wrist just like bends. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I barely can. And it's like taking like all of my strength for me not to like my whole arm to break into pieces. But supposedly he's grabbing an entire little cast iron stove and bludgeoning Philip Peters to death.
Damn.
It's said that he flees at this point, but it's unclear whether he flees the home or just flees back into the attic space he was occupying. And I tend to think he just went back into the attic.
Probably. I mean, where else is he going to go?
Because there's a little more to the story from this point.
Oh, God. That's really sad because this lady had just went to the hospital and was recovering from her damn broken yes. hip. And, like, her husband just got murdered at their house.
I know.
Like straight up murdered. And it wasn't the homeowner's fault.
Could you imagine
how scary? Like, I mean, he shouldn't have attacked him. He should have fled. Like,
yeah.
And called the police. But like, could you imagine you walk into the kitchen and somebody's rummaging through your guy? I'd probably attack him too, because you're in my fucking house.
I don't know what I do, but yeah.
And I don't know where you came from. I don't know who you are. Like, probably may not have even recognized him.
Well, he probably didn't. And I'm sure that Theodore's not looking so hot.
Right. But living in an attic.
Like some crazed, deranged, dirty, skinny man.
Yeah, probably a lot of facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
just very disheveled.
This poor man. Sure. That's unfortunate. That's so sad.
I know. So Mr. Peters' body is discovered when his neighbors become concerned because he does not show up for dinner, as a lot of the neighbors had been helping Mr. Peters while his wife was hospitalized by preparing meals, having him over for dinner.
Aww.
So the neighbors gain entry into the residence and they find Mr. Peters' bludgeoned body, which was reported to have been struck more than 35 times. And I'm assuming that's the pistol and that cast iron stove that somehow dude picked up.
I'm not buying this dude's sickliness. Has that ever been confirmed? Like,
if
can,
you see a picture,
see sickly.
If you see a picture of him, yes.
Yeah.
He looks gaunt. He looks skeletal.
I guess you could be skeletal and strong.
Well, adrenaline.
I guess.
But I'm also wondering, like, if he didn't bludgeon him by, like, taking the man's head and beating him against the stove. That makes more sense to me.
That sounds more, yeah, because it'd be a lot easier to move a 75-year-old man who walks with a cane than
the thing that they land on, which makes them think that was the murder weapon in the sense of not just the pistol. There are two of those stoves. One of them's obviously used, dusty. This one is, like, cleaned.
So he cleaned it?
Yes. This one has been painstakingly cleaned.
Okay. Yeah, so he probably did just bash his face into the to the stove. Had to have.
I don't know. It's some of the old reports.
Well, just, I mean, they weren't, you know.
Yeah.
As detailed.
So the police, obviously, are called at this point. And as they arrived at the scene, they're looking around, trying to figure out what the hell took place. They don't find a lot of evidence that's helping them seal up this murder case. There weren't any signs of forced entry, and they just didn't have any viable suspects. You know, again, he's a well-liked member of the community.
Perfect crime.
Yeah.
Like, he's still in the house.
Yes. The caller is in the house. That babysitter.
Oh, what is that? Oh, what movie is that?
When a Stranger Calls?
Yeah, When a Stranger Calls.
Okay. Yeah.
He's in the house.
He's in the house. house. The call is coming from inside the house. What?
What? Hello?
What?
Is anyone here?
Hold on a second. My boyfriend's beeping it. Hold on a second. Yeah.
Anybody who asks, is anybody there when they're afraid? Shame on you.
Is anybody home?
If the person wants to kill you,
are you alone?
They're not going to answer you. House?
Like, yeah, I'm eating a lot of pizza. And I've rubbed peanut butter all over myself. I don't know.
Is anybody here? Yeah, I'm in the kitchen. You want a sandwich?
You want a sandwich? I made liver and onions on a sandwich.
Liver and onions.
Hey, I'm trying to make sure this creep doesn't break into my house, Laura. I'll do what I need to do.
I have no good food to offer you.
I have no food. So as no money or valuables appeared to be missing, the police also then ruled out robbery as a motive. And the case went unsolved for about 1 year. So let that sink in.
Oh, he's living in this house. The woman's going to come back.
Yeah, she does. She comes back.
She's living in the house. She's living in the house with the man who murdered her husband.
Yes. So during the early months of 1942, Helen was living at the home alone and recovering from her surgery with the help of friends and neighbors coming in and checking in. But strange things happened in the home, and Helen soon found herself without the support of her scared neighbors. Like, people were starting to get spooked because of things happening in the home.
Oh, no. Are they thinking it's, like, ghost activity or something?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
No!
So she does end up moving to Grand Junction, Colorado to live with family to complete her recovery.
Yeah.
Because she's running out of support. But an example of some of the strange occurrences that were reported in the home include missing food.
Yeah.
Items that were suddenly just out of place.
Yeah.
And odd noises, other bizarre events that people just couldn't quite explain. And then after Helen leaves to go live with family, the neighbors continued to experience bizarre phenomena, including strange smells and sounds, as well as sometimes seeing a person walking around outside the home at night.
So there's nobody in it. Like, it's supposed to be a vacant house, and they're, like, having smells, and, like, it's like somebody's still there, but they don't see the person. God, man, if you ever think your house is haunted, just check the attic first.
Oh, God. When I go up there, I'm kind of like, hello, ghost. How are you today?
I come in peace.
I'm just coming to move some garbage from up here down here, or vice versa.
I just want my Christmas decorations. So I'll be going now.
Hi, little Bartholomew ghost. How are you doing?
You should not have named him Bartholomew.
Your suspenders and trousers are very nice. Yeah. So the neighbors decide to report the events that are happening. They go to the police and they're like,
excuse me,
some weird shit going on here. We're going to need you guys to come back and figure this out. And thankfully, the police took interest in it.
Okay.
They decided to deploy two officers to further investigate these occurrences. And the funny thing about this, the events and reports ended up earning the Phillips home a nickname in the local papers, and they came up with the Ghost House of Denver.
Well, I mean, okay, let's be fair. You're experiencing signs of, like, paranormal, quote-unquote, activity because shit's moving around. You don't know who it is, whatever. Also, somebody was brutally murdered in this house.
True.
So.
True. I wonder if they thought it was Mr. Peter's ghost and never mentioned that, but.
Probably. I'm assure you they didn't think it was the fucking murderer.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they explain the smells. Mr. Peters is cooking his franken beans again.
I don't know.
His Viennese sausages. So after several unfruitful searches, in addition to a months-long stakeout, so they did a stakeout.
Damn.
Of this place. Can you imagine trying to convince the police to do a stakeout for
a month long?
For a month nowadays,
you know,
for haunting.
They put the police. These were the officers who got in trouble. And they were like, you know what your punishment is? You're going to go fucking do stakeout at the fucking Denver haunted house.
What do they call it? The hot dog squad when they're blubbering idiots or something? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
the hot dog squad.
You go watch this vacant fucking house and look for ghosts, okay?
Here's your dozen donuts. Here's your coffee.
Be gone.
Get out.
This has got to be like just the worst stakeout ever. It's like just watching a fucking house.
Yeah. I guess it depends. You know, it depends on what your work life was like before that. Because to me, it also sounds kind of like, okay.
Well, I mean, we like ghost stuff. So like, hell yeah, I want to go see if it's haunted.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've been there with my like equipment. My little like EMF.
What do they call it? EMF.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna bring my sound box, my ghost box.
Those radio, is that what the radio thing is, where they cycle through the stations really
that's
quick?
That's called a, oh shit, I forgot what that's called. Is it a ghost box?
It might be a ghost box.
Is that what they call it?
I don't know. My Parker Brothers Ouija board.
Anyway, the cops are looking for ghosts.
Yeah. So the cops are looking for ghosts, and they're having little seances out in their cars. I don't think so. And after several unfruitful searches, and I already said this, a months-long stakeout, the cause behind the strange occurrences was finally determined, or rather apprehended. Police had been conducting yet another routine search of the property, and on this occasion, in July 1942, police happened to see a thin pair of legs disappearing into a hole in the closet leading up to the attic.
Oh, that imagery just scares the shit out of me. I hate that. Like, just some little legs being like, gross. Oh, God. I can't imagine. I'd be the cop and I'd be like, you're going up there to get him. I'm not.
Well, they, so none of they couldn't fit. The officers that were
so
there,
little.
Yes, and it was such a small hole or trapdoor or whatever it is, so they couldn't fit up there. They had to wait for the smallest precinct had to send, like, the skinniest, smallest officer they had, and then he had to get up in there.
Oh, what a bad day to be skinny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, excuse me, Officer Jones, you are literally the only one who fit up there. So guess what you get to do? You get to go look for the crazy person in the attic.
They find some child on the street and they're like, you want a candy bar? Give you a candy bar if you go up into this crazy man's attic space where he's been living and defecating for like a year.
Convince him to come out.
Yeah.
So we can arrest him.
He's an honorary sheriff now. The six-year-old kid that went up there is the honorary sheriff of the town. So they get him. They send the small...
Sure.
Police officer up there, and they're able to bring him in for questioning and take him into custody. And while Theodore's at the station being questioned, the small police officer they sent, I don't have the guy's name, so I should keep it up. Schmall guy is up there.
Officer Schmall
is up there investigating the small and cramped attic space that was Theodore's living area for almost 1 year.
They're going to be pooping. No, I guess he would come down to use the bathroom. No.
So it is just this human nest of sorts. And there's feces, food items, all these other indications that, yeah, somebody had been living up there for a while.
Ew, it's like a rat's nest for a human.
Spider. He's a spider.
Oh, I hate it.
Spider's nest. That's do spiders gross. Poop in their webs?
No.
What is spider poop?
I don't know.
Is there spider poop?
I mean, there has to be some kind of excrement.
Or do they regurgitate?
I don't know. I don't think they should. If they do shit, it falls down and it doesn't stick into their webs.
It's like decor.
You don't ever see a spider's nest with like a bunch of shit in it.
Like, well, I don't know what it would look like.
I don't know. This is the rat man.
Need some entomologists to call in and give us an explanation on this.
This is not Spider-Man. This is Rat Man. Like, what is that movie? Wilbur?
Oh, yes. That made me think of that, too. Wilbur.
Yeah, the rat movie.
Yes. I never saw it. Yeah.
No, neither did I. Because I was like, I don't know if I like that so much.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Well, and you know what a rat king is, right?
A rat king?
You heard the term rat king?
No.
I guess it's apparently a real thing, not to sidetrack us too much, but it's when rats get all tangled up together, their tails get all tangled, and it's just this ball of angry rats. That's a rat king. I know. I feel sad and scared.
I do. I feel sad for it. Could you imagine like having your tail is just wrapped up and then they're all hurt and they're all just angry and like trying to hurt each other and like run away?
I know.
That's sad.
It's horrifying and sad.
It is horrifying.
Can you imagine a cat king?
Oh, God. No. One cat is enough. They don't need to fucking combine and transform into a fucking mecha cat.
Their version of Voltron.
Yeah. Cats are murderous and awful enough. I just like, I don't know if I would be scared of a rat king or if I would just be like, well, that's sad. Because I don't know if they're like cognizant enough to like to attack you. Like, are they all going to attack you at once? Because I
probably
feel like they're fighting.
They're upset. I mean, I don't think they'll be like directly attacking you, but I think they're just going nuts.
Yeah.
Because they're in pain.
I'm going to have to, you know what, I'm going to have to look up a video of a rat king now because I have to, I'm imagining what it looks like and it just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I know.
Gross.
So again, this poor officer is up in the rat's nest that Theodore has formed and finding all of this stuff. And while this is happening back at the station, Theodore makes a full confession to police, and he is charged with murder and is sentenced to life in prison.
I mean, okay, life in prison.
Yeah.
Like, for him, food, shelter.
Yes. Maybe some level of health care, at least even if it's minimal.
Maybe some socialization.
Showers.
Like,
at some intervals.
I'm not surprised that he admitted it, because I don't think he wanted to kill him.
No, I doubt he did.
It was just, he got scared.
Well, he said it was me or him.
Yeah.
I think he said in his confession, it seemed like it was me or him.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, obviously he has a will to survive because he's living in somebody's fucking attic.
I don't see how.
Shitting all over the place and stuff. I mean, at least now he's in jail. He's in a clean cell that's not full of his own shit.
Yeah, seriously. So, and he passes away in 1967 while incarcerated.
He lived a long time for somebody who wasn't supposed to make it over the age of 18.
He really did. And I don't know how much of that's due to either the doctors being just really wrong.
Probably.
Or just sheer willpower.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one's just like, it's not even like he was like.
I know.
Being
I know.
Malicious. It was just survival. You know, not that I'm saying like what he did is okay. Yeah. Obviously, you should not break into and live in other people's houses, because if I find you, I'm going to kill you in my house. You're going to scare me, and I watch too much horror stuff. And it's just going to be bad. Don't do it. But like, I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah,
like,
it was
not like he had a whole lot of other choices.
It was down to survival.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. It's just too bad he didn't just ask, because I wonder if they wouldn't have taken him in based on their past experience with him.
They probably would have. I mean, he probably could have helped take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
He probably could have, because like, obviously they needed assistance like cooking and, you know, getting around and stuff. So he probably could have just asked them. And
You know. He had just taken that approach instead.
But the sad thing is that he avoided asking out of pride.
Yes.
So, and then he wound up murdering the guy that he was going to ask for help.
And living in their house.
Yeah.
That bothers me more than the murder.
Yeah.
It feels like more of an invasion.
Yeah. Because I hear squirrels in my walls all the time. And I'm like, if somebody is behind this wall, I swear to God. I swear to God.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie, The Boy? The horror movie?
I haven't yet.
No? Okay. Well,
I haven't. I heard like mixed stuff about it. At first I heard it was really good, and then I heard like,
It's I wouldn't define it as like a good horror movie, but it's worth a watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't like, watch don't have thing. Your expectations up, because it's kind of stupid, but like still like interesting.
I feel like my expectations are never high with movies.
Well, I always go into horror movies with very low expectations, and then I wind up liking a lot of them because I already thought it was going to be shit.
Yeah. Oh, and I rewatched that movie I was saying was like my favorite horror movie, The Changeling. I rewatched it. It's okay.
So that happens to me a lot too with like movies. We just watched something. CJ and I watched a movie that I had loved as like a kid, and I told him it was like my favorite or one of my favorite movies or something. And then we watched it and he was like, still one of your favorite movies? And I was like, well, it didn't age well. And I don't remember it being that like gross. You know what I mean? It's just it's the times have changed.
They have.
So a lot of things that were acceptable then are not acceptable anymore.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of, unfortunately, when you watch a lot of old movies and stuff, you see a lot of like stereotypes, like female stereotypes.
Oh, absolutely.
Like male stereotypes, all that stuff. So
yeah.
They just, you go back and watch them and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I guess my child imagination made that way cooler than I thought it was.
This was terrifying when I was a kid. Now it's
awkward. My mom was terrified of the movie Cujo. I watched Cujo. Oh, and I was like, this is not scary to me.
Yeah, I think I was afraid of it back then, but I think I was more afraid of like, I hope a dog doesn't attack me because I can't kill it.
Yeah.
Poor puppy.
No, she like went to see it in the movie theater when it came out, and she like her and her friend like walked out to go back to their car at night, and like a dog barked and they like freaked out. I was like, that's cute. I wish horror movies had that effect on me still.
I know.
But like just the evolution of everything, it's just...
Well, and there are just some I'm not willing to watch because it's just straight up torture.
Human Centipede? I don't ever suggest that movie to me. I'm not watching that movie. I refuse.
I've never seen that one. And then a Serbian film.
Nope. Don't watch that
Never see that. Did you hear that they released an uncut version? Whatever the fuck that
means. There's an uncut version of the Serbian film?
There's an uncut version of that.
But it's already fucking, like, vile.
I don't understand what that means.
I don't know.
I can't wrap my brain around it.
I think I've read about it. And
yeah, I've read about it.
About the Serbian film.
I've read the kind of the plot of sorts. Yeah.
Uncut might actually have like more awfulness in it.
I can't imagine.
I don't know.
What that would, I just can't, just based on reading about what it's about and knowing I can't watch it at that level.
Exactly. I read about it. No, I'm just, mm-mm. I don't like torture porn movies. I don't like, I'm okay with gore.
Because yeah. Obviously yeah.
It goes along with horror and like body horror and people like being murdered and stuff. But like, I'm not okay with like a movie being like half focusing on a girl's face screaming while she's getting her legs cut off or something. Yes. You know what I mean? Like if that's half the content of the whole
yeah.
thing, then, you know.
Yeah, it's not.
And of course she's wearing like a fucking like bra and underwear. You know what
bikini,
I mean? Like, come on.
Something.
Come on.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking see this.
Like, who is this intended for? It's okay to
put like a little bit of it in there.
Sure.
But like, you know, maybe like a scene.
Well, be like, we're done. Be realistic about it.
Yeah. Especially because like they'll scream like they don't ever pass out from shock. They don't ever like pass out from blood loss.
Yeah.
You pass out pretty easily as a human when you're.
Yeah. And you make some disgusting like sounds into.
And
like,
your makeup doesn't look nice and your hair doesn't look good either. No, you know what I mean? Like they just put like a little bit of blood in the tips of the hair or whatever. And I'm like, bitch, she would be drenched in her own blood. It would all be slicked back.
And matter. Just body and like, brain matter. It would
be gross. It'd be like a gross rat's nest of. Yeah. Like,
rat's nest.
Show me the realness.
Yeah.
Scare me. Yeah. That doesn't scare me.
Nope. Well, so that's it. That's all I've got for you guys. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have any feedback, be sure to leave us a message on social media or at our website, which is simply terriblepeopledoingterriblethings@wordpress.com. .wordpress.com, son of a bitch.
And remember, terrible people are everywhere.
And you might just be one of them.